It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Buongiorno. Good to see everyone. Welcome back to Access of Easy. This is number 324, the audio.
Buonasera, Joey. Buonasera.
Buonasera, the sidekick to the Access of Easy newsletter, which you should be signed up for. You probably are if you listen to this. AccessofEasy.com. You sign up, you get 10% off, I think, something that you buy off EasyDNS, which is great. Can't beat that. Mark's always giving stuff away. Every week, we talk about five or six stories. I say five or six. Most of the time, it's actually four or five stories, the headliners. But the newsletter has a lot more. And of course, you can hit the comments section, all that good stuff. So make sure you sign up. And if you're on YouTube, like the video, subscribe to the channel. Wherever you find your podcast, subscribe to us there. And you can hear us every week talking about the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. Len, great to see you again tonight. How's things over there in the basement?
Nothing has changed, Joey. I'm still the same as last week because zero progress in terms of my health and everything else. But you know what? It's all right. I'm here for another week. Could be a lot worse. So nice. I'm counting my blessings. Yeah, how are things with you?
Good. I just got back from dinner. Went to my old man's for dinner. Always good to see him. Had a steak and a couple of plates of vegetables there. I got to tell you, Len, I'm not a big fan of this winter darkness. Like I find myself now very disappointed when I leave my house. Most of the time at the end of the workday, you know, I'm pretty busy in the afternoons and in the mornings. I get a nice little break at lunch. It's still light out at lunch, obviously. But then when I try and take my dog out at 4:30, it's dark almost. Like you can really start to see things kind of dimming down now. It's happening faster and faster. I was thinking today, when is the shortest day of the year? It's in December, right? So we're not that far off from the shortest day of the year. I got to keep that in mind. Keep the spirits up, keep the vibes high.
21st, 22nd, something like that. And it doesn't get any better for some time. If you look at the sunrise and sunset, the calendar, it really doesn't improve noticeably until the middle of January. Oh. So it's several weeks before you could even notice a hint of a notice that it's getting more and more daylight throughout the day. Grin and bear it. What are we doing here, Joey? We have a means. Let's sell our homes, go somewhere warm. El Salvador's calling. Right, there's lots of good places over there that we can go to.
We gotta go. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get into the show. So, as always, we'll start with the quote of the week from last week. Civil disobedience is not our problem. Our problem is civil obedience. That was by a guy named Howard Zinn. Ray was the lucky winner there. Good job, Ray. Nice work in the comments there. This week's quote: until you do what you believe in, you don't know whether you believe it or not. Now, if you know who that was by, without Googling, of course, don't pervert the process, okay, you sickos? Put it in the comments. Your next renewal is free on the house with EasyDNS as long as you know who said that. I'm not sure who said that. That's another good quote, though. I got to say, Mark and Joan, who do the letter, very strong quotes the last, 6 weeks, I would say. They're always pretty good, but the last 6 weeks, I felt like they're really resonating with me, you know? Maybe I'm just ready to be part of a revolution. I'm not sure.
Joey, you got to get Linux because when you first boot up or log into Linux, it gives you the quote of the day. And every time you log in the first time, you get the quote of the day and you get something like this. So every day you log in, you get to think about something. It's one of the first great things about Linux. It makes you think right from the get-go.
That's good. I like that. Actually, that's a nice feature. Windows doesn't do that. Windows doesn't actually, do much at all, actually.
That's now lost, though, because that's in the terminal when you would be logging in with text. Nowadays, everybody logs in strictly to X Windows, with some sort of manager that facilitates it. So you don't have that anymore. But in the old days, it was always you log in with the terminal with your username, password, and boom, quote of the day shows up. That was awesome.
You'd love to see it. Let's get into the stories. We got a couple of dingers today, including Microsoft, Facebook, like all the heavy hitters are back, Len. It's like a home run derby out here this week's Access of Easy. Everyone you want to see hit the ball, they're coming to the plate. Who do you want to start with?
Yeah, well, it's almost a Mount Rushmore of who. Oh, let's do it right away. We'll go to Microsoft and Facebook, and they're going to be talking about election interference plans because elections in 2024, they're less than a year away. Yep. And it's going to be a fun one, Joey. This is going to be a real fun one.
Fun is a word I would, not have expected you to use. But yeah, sure. It's going to be something anyway.
Well, if we have the candidates, which I hope come out to be the nominees. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll see what happens with that. Anyways, Microsoft and Meta, they each came out saying they're going to do what they can to combat what they call election disinformation. So yeah, some of the methods they will use are going to be fact checkers and digital watermarking. And we talked about fact checkers at length in the past, so there's really not much else I'm going to add to it aside from really who are the people that are administering the fact checkers and figuring out what is truthful or not. But anyways, the watermarking is something that is very interesting. So Microsoft will start digital watermarking metadata for images and videos. And this is as designed by the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity, the C2PA. And so what is the C2PA? Well, they aim to address misleading information online through the development of technical standards for certifying the source and history of media content. If you look at this coalition, Microsoft is a member of it, and they're going to be relying on this to help authenticate if indeed something is true. So Microsoft essentially has become the judge, jury, and executioner in the case in what is misinformation. Obviously, there's too much power in one person's or one player's hands to decide what's going on. And Microsoft is a very big player. They can, just like Meta, influence a lot of people moving forward. And if they could influence enough people in the middle, that could potentially turn an election one way or another.
Yeah,
it's always like that. It's you have your hardcore supporters for your Democrats. You have your hardcore supporters for your Republicans. But it's the people in the middle that switch from party to party or decide to vote or not vote. Those are the ones that decide who wins the election and who dictates policy and regulations and all that stuff moving forward. So this is what is at stake here and who's responsible for controlling the narrative, how they're going to control it. And once again, we're just going to have to look at the end of the day and point fingers. What happened? Who happened? You know what? For this C2PA stuff, this coalition, I tried to look to find out the money trail, who's funding it. I couldn't find it, but I'd love to know who is doing this because the money has to be coming from somewhere. Who is it? Why is it? And what do they want? A lot of questions. I don't have all the answers.
I'm curious about the one. There's one part of the article here on Reclaim the Net that it kind of got a red flag going in my head when he's talking about, you know, Microsoft's quote election protection commitments. What are those commitments and who are they to exactly? Like, who is Microsoft pledging these things to? What are the rules of engagement here? We've seen over the years, and Meta, you know, to their credit, I believe, Len, that Meta now is letting advertising run on their platform, maybe just Instagram, maybe not Facebook, I forget. About how the 2020 election was quote unquote stolen. Some people obviously believe that. You may be among them, listener, viewer. I'm not sure. I'm not going to talk about it on this program, but this kind of flies in the face of that that gap in rules. And so I'm wondering what this is going to look like come election time. One thing I think that we do a bad job of, maybe not you and me, but I think a lot of people generally, especially on the right, have this idea that the big tech corporations, Microsoft and Meta in this case, that are quote unquote censoring their candidates, censoring their points of view, are only doing so to favor one side of the aisle. I'm not 100% sure that's correct. And I wonder, you know, in a Republican government, I mean, we obviously had Trump from 16 to 20 and, Sleepy Joe since then. I'd be curious what the next set of big tech censorship looks like when presumably we have a Republican president. And I'm presuming that based on, you know, Biden running. If he runs, I don't think he wins. I suspect that the Republicans will try and shut down opposing points of view online as well, because the stakes are so great now in these election campaigns that you almost be foolish not to try that, right? The playbook is already laid out for you, really. You use terms like misinformation, and you're able to shut down basically whatever avenues of thought that you like without much consequence, really. You know, short of shows like this, maybe our other show, and a handful of others that really are siloed in a lot of ways. People who want to know more about the censorship of these ideas already know the ideas are being censored. It's the people who don't listen to these shows that really need to hear it, and they're not listening to it anyway. And so, you know, this is kind of a long-winded way of saying that I think this is still a story that's very much in its infancy, and we've only really seen one side take advantage of this so far. But I suspect going forward, we'll see the Republicans of the right, both here and in the U.S., honestly, Len, take advantage of similar tactics again, because the stakes are just so high. You'd be crazy not to try, right?
Well, they've lost this war for at least up until now, so they're going to have to change your tactics. Yeah. It's not just these platforms you were mentioning, what we were talking about, but it's also general mainstream media. They haven't been favorable towards the Republican Party, and they've been much more favorable to the Democrats. Why? Well, there's a host of reasons.
You know, Len, that if you go to places like Our Politics on Reddit, I don't recommend going there unless you have like a Xanax, Andy. You'll want to put your head through the drywall. But there's a lot of people on the left who view the media as being slanted toward Republican and conservative points of view. So there is some mixed feelings about where the slant is coming from. I think you and I both agree that the battle is being lost by the right predominantly, but there's a lot of people who feel the opposite way. And so I just wonder how do you come to that conclusion right now? Number one. And number two, you know, I think, like I said before, it's naive to think that the right won't try and do the same thing when they're in power. There is no form of, you know, party rule that's going to be free of corruption and attempts to silence opponents, sometimes illegitimately. And I don't think this is an example. This is not a different story in any way. I think we'll see this once the right gets an opportunity.
No, we'll see what happens, and we'll move on, because we'll talk about Outlook next. And really, friends should not let friends use Outlook. That's something that people should stay away from.
Teams, Microsoft, Outlook, SharePoint. What else have we talked about on this show? I can't wait to hear what this is, but this is Microsoft every week.
It is. So here we are. Microsoft's new Outlook application. And this is a recommended app if you're running Windows 11. And this new application, this new Outlook application, may be trying to gather your email information to be sent over to one of the Microsoft servers. The bonus of giving up all this information, because when you do sign up, use the Microsoft Outlook, provide your SMTP, your email address, your password, all that stuff, they might be siphoning information, including your login data for the user's email, the calendar, the contacts. And this opens up a whole bunch of rich features that are possible, that only because they have a centralized service that only Microsoft can provide. Of course, this means that Microsoft will then also be able to access all your emails, read them, analyze them, and maybe slap a digital watermarking on your email should they not find them agreeable. But really, if you're giving them all this information and they are trolling this information just like Google is, and they're trying to build up their database of information, Bing, ChatGPT, for instance, they need this information. And if people are going to be willingly giving this up, they have nobody else to blame but themselves. This is just a reminder. Don't use, if you can, try to avoid these centralized services like this that have a checkered past. Because if you do use it, once you open up the barn door, that's it. The horse is going to escape, and there's no purpose closing it because they have all that information. And if there's anything in your email that you want to keep relatively secure, or even your contacts information, your calendar, why give that up? There's no reason to do that. Anyways, Outlook definitely gets two thumbs down from me. And I'm sure from you too, Joey. There's no reason to really use it, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I use it professionally. I know you do too. One thing that I'll mention, I don't remember if I talked to you about this. I talked to a couple of my colleagues about this. We don't use read receipts often in my line of work for emails. But the new Outlook, and I suspect this is because they're basically putting you in this walled garden now. Did you know that Outlook has this thing you can attach to emails that you send? And I think probably other Outlook items, calendar events and meeting invites and things of that nature, called Viva Insights. You ever see this on your Outlook?
Never even heard of it. Okay. Who knows? It may not be part of my suite.
So you're going to love this. Viva Insights, one good example here of kind of what I would consider to be overreaching personally. Even an email without read receipts on, using Viva Insights, you can see how many of your recipients opened and read the email. How about that?
So that's troubling.
It is troubling. And so you got to think if the Outlook service knows what's being opened and read, if the Outlook service knows when people are away or at their computer, right? That's another thing we can see at work. If the Outlook service records this stuff and sends it basically publicly, I mean, if I'm away from my computer for 15 or 20 minutes, it'll tell anyone who's hovering over my avatar how long I've been away from the keyboard for. You cannot begin to imagine, my friends, what Outlook is keeping and not telling you, what it's recording and not telling you. You know, if you go into your email and you're emailing somebody, I know, for example, if I talk to a working group that I frequently do different tasks with, Outlook will tell me all the different tasks that I have outstanding and where it thinks those tasks should kind of place as far as like in my calendar and things like that. Pretty wild, man, this Viva Insights thing. And so again, if it's sharing this with you, the question is, what is it recording that it's not sharing? And I don't think anyone's going to be happy with that second answer if they're able to get a look at it.
Yeah, the problem is if your employer requires you to use it, you're forced to use it for at least your professional side.
That's not that big a deal, right? But the personal thing, like the Windows, I have Windows 11 on this computer, this laptop that we use for these shows. I don't know if I don't think there's Outlook on there. Not last time I checked. I don't really do email on this, but maybe I'll look after the show. I'm not sure.
Outlook was always like part of it. I could be wrong. And I know this new Outlook is trying to be pushed on. It's a recommended application.
How many people use like email apps? Isn't webmail just better? Like Gmail's better than Outlook is. I've always found Gmail to be better than Outlook anyways. I'm not sure why you would like have a separate app on your computer for email personally. I mean, that's maybe just the millennial talking, but I don't think a lot of people younger than me feel that way either. I don't think people your age feel that way either, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know anyone who likes Outlook more than they like browser-based Gmail, right? I don't think that's unpopular.
What device you're using it, if it's a handheld like a phone.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, sure.
Typically, you're going to use an app, but yeah, you're right. For me, if I'm on my laptop, I'm always going to be using the browser version.
Like for sure.
Proton or whatever.
For sure.
It works. I prefer it. It's maybe, I don't know. I like the clunkiness that comes along with it. I don't know why. I like that style, the feel, and it works for me. So anyway, let's move on. We'll talk about a pro-Palestinian group that has started a phishing campaign. Oh, well, I guess they've moved on from blocking major bridges in Montreal. So during a period between July and October of 2023, a Middle Eastern APT group carried out a series of targeted cyber espionage attacks. And this group employed a never-before-seen initial access bootloader known as Ironwind. And before we even go there, this is in order to infiltrate target systems. So Ironwind, the name Ironwind.
I guess like a 4 out of 5, honestly. That sounds like a unique Diablo item. Like you'd be hunting, you'd be like target farming for Ironwind grandfather sword or something. I'm in on that. Give me a 4.5 out of 5 on that. That's pretty good.
Well, that's much. I would give it around 3.5. It reminds me a little bit of a character from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. So I'll give him that. So it does sound pretty good. It's better than a lot of others we've heard, definitely. So each of us gave him decent marks here. So anyways, Ironwind represents a novel initial access downloader that can infiltrate a target system. And this downloader differentiates itself from other access tools, and it employs a technique known as just-in-time compilation, which involves compiling code on a target system rather than embedding it itself in a downloader itself. That's very ingenious. This further minimizes the downloader's footprint, making it more challenging to detect. These guys are pretty darn good for doing this.
Sharp, yeah.
And Ironwind then fetches the additional payloads, including a backdoor and remote access tool, all the nasty stuff that could be accessed and targeted to one of the systems. And the campaigns carried out have been primarily targeting organizations in the Middle East, including government agencies, educational institutions, and media outlets. And they believe that this group is motivated by a desire to gather intelligence related to the Israeli and Palestinian conflict. So really just the same old stuff here that's being recommended is update your
software to ensure there's no more vulnerabilities. Don't click on phishing emails. And you should learn about any of the phishing tactics that come around. So nothing else really to say except for, man, they're evolving with in terms of how they're deploying this stuff. And if it's just, I like that it's the fact that it's being compiled on the remote computer. I wouldn't want it to be added on my computer, but these guys, I got to give them credit. They're being innovative and they're trying to think outside the box. Now, hopefully they could do it for good rather than evil. But let's see what happens moving forward.
You mentioned a couple of things there about the Ironwind, I guess, software downloader, whatever. One thing you didn't mention is that they're using Microsoft PowerPoint as kind of a landing spot for a lot of these malicious files. How's that, eh? Like Microsoft, again, I don't expect them to catch everything, but these are not little known threats. If they're in these, if it's in InfoSecurity Magazine, if it's on Access of Easy, it's not a little known threat. It's something that's become prevalent or become public knowledge. And Microsoft, you know, for all its manpower, for all its all-time highs in the equity price, doesn't think that PowerPoint needs some kind of like base level. You cannot import this file with this, like this extension is not required for PowerPoint. There's no need for you to import this. And yet here we are again, with Microsoft as one of the, you know, fulcrums of infection. And then the other one was Dropbox and something else I forget now, but you know, it's funny again, like we oftentimes give a lot of gripe, a lot of guff to the user because you shouldn't be clicking stuff or downloading stuff, obviously, but this one's pretty good. Like it's sneaky. There's like some side loading going on. It's a dot, you know, it's in a RAR library or a dot RAR library. It's in a PowerPoint add-on. Again, they're called advanced persistent threat, you know, groups for a reason. And this is to me all of the above. So I probably expect to hear more from this. And listen, whatever the story is, I'm glad that we're able to talk about it and cover it. And I'm even happier that it's a decent name for once instead of you know, a series of numbers and letters strung together in a haphazard way.
Doesn't it seem it's targeting Microsoft systems, Microsoft Windows systems? And
pretty steady, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just going out, thinking a little bit into the weeds here. Have you ever, I don't know how quick your computer is to open up and shut down, but the
fast,
only
so fast.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I'm envious because holy cow, the one that I have that's been assigned to me takes forever to turn on. It's literally 10 minutes before I push the power on.
You're talking about your professional unit?
Where, and after 10 minutes, that's when I'm actually able to click stuff because it takes forever, which I find that to be so strange because I have several Linux boxes here and it takes 15 seconds, 20 seconds. It is done. It's loaded. It's good. Yeah. It's shutting down. Same thing. Opening up PDFs quick. The other one, the one for my work, opening up PDF, it's minutes at times.
And
it's
you have to ask for the upgrade. You have to ask for the upgrade. I asked for the upgrade maybe 4 months ago. And so I have like the higher level unit. It's a lot better than the base level. Yeah. Think about doing that.
Well,
I'll walk you through the process off the air.
Let's talk about Ethereum and a theft that took place about. Yeah. So sticking with this theme here, friends don't let friends use Ethereum.
Big time.
There's a feature in Ethereum that was abused. I can't believe they abused a feature. And this was used to steal some, I guess, ETH. They call it cryptocurrency, but I will call it ETH. And in 6 months, 99,000 people lost about $60 million. And the attackers were using a feature called Create2, which is used to create smart contracts that looked just like the real ones. And it was easy to trick them into sending people money. The attackers were able to steal this money by creating fake websites and social media accounts. And then they used these accounts to promote these fake contracts. When people visited the websites, these fake websites, they were prompted to send money to the attacker's address. And they did this willingly. Again, these guys use ETH, so there's really nothing else to say. The attackers were able to do this for a period of 6 months before they were caught. And they were eventually caught because somebody did some analysis on the blockchain, which is interesting because in order to do so, you have to have a full node that requires 32 ETH to run a node. And it's not cheap to do so. It's not like running a Raspberry Pi and you know, $100 hard drive and you're good to go with Bitcoin. It's totally different in ETH. But man, so people got scammed quite a bit of money. I would say they got scammed out of essentially something that's going to be trending to zero eventually. But you know what? This goes to show you, don't give away your money to anybody. Don't be very careful with what you're doing. But most importantly, don't use ETH, man. Don't use it. There's no reason to do it. This thing is a centralized scam. Just my opinion. I could be wrong. And you know what? This thing eventually will just trend to zero over time. Don't use it. I would suggest if you're looking for anything, buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think the complexity of Ethereum has allowed for a lot of attack vectors to kind of, you know, come up from under the surface over the years. I'll just add that anecdotally, I've been receiving messages from friends over the last little while, Len, in terms of these, you know, accounts pumping scam contracts, about the number of different advertisements on Twitter based around NFTs and airdrops and all manner of things that in more, you know, more cases than not utilize some characteristics of the Ethereum blockchain, or you know, are operating on Ethereum itself, right? Ethereum itself, it's like the mother of all these scam tokens, as we talked about many times, you know, on both shows, actually, this and CBP. And so I think there's something to be said for the number of plebs that are targeted by advanced threats of this nature, because they're really never going to get an advanced user this way at this point. It doesn't seem likely to me that someone would buy into executing a smart contract or being willy-nilly with their Ethereum or their NFTs or whatever. There's just been too many stories at this point. But people who are clicking links on Twitter, for sure, don't worry about that kind of stuff. And so it's yet again another case where the target is just so ill-equipped, so wet behind the ears, that asking them to know everything they need to know about protecting themselves is basically, it's too tall a mountain to climb, and they get nicked, right? The one thing I'm curious about going forward is how many, you know, especially with ETFs now kind of on the horizon for ETH and Bitcoin, is this not a concern for the SEC that Ethereum has become the home of scams, frauds, you know, illegal securities and things like this? It must be a concern. Bitcoin doesn't suffer from any of these things, as we know. And I'm going to be, it feels like anyways, eternally curious. I hope they come up with an answer soon, but I'm not really super hopeful. But I do want to know what they think about this kind of stuff. I am sure that it is part of the consideration when it comes to legitimizing this asset with an NFT, with an ETF.
Well, let's see what BlackRock does, because they filed, or at least in the motions of filing, an ETH ETF. And, you know, by doing so, that's a very powerful player that wants to have this out there in traditional finance. Yeah. So really, what could then the SEC do if they're going to be going butting heads with BlackRock?
Maybe nothing, honestly. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Which is, it's too bad, because there was a quote today that I saw, a video footage of Vitalik. He was saying that when you invest in Ethereum, when you put money in Ethereum, you're investing not just in the network, but the people involved in the network.
Unreal. And unreal.
That's a security. Right. Yeah. So like, but they're not going to go after them for whatever reason. We could speculate. There's no reason to it, I guess, at this particular moment. It just, things happen the way they do. Anyways, we can move on. And we talk about a young group of hackers, and they created a malware called Mirai. I think they pronounced that right. Mirai. We'll call Mirai, I guess. Mirai.
I would call it Mirai.
Yeah. We'll go with that. So the malware infected devices and used them to launch attacks on other devices, taking down websites like Twitter and Amazon. And so these three young hackers that created this thing, we'll call them Larry, Mo, and Curly, they met online in 2016, and they began experimenting and creating malware at that time. And eventually they created this Mirai thing, whatever. And so, which was designed to infect internet-connected devices such as routers, webcams, and security cameras. And the attack is really, it's a big wake-up call for the security industry. It really shows how easy it is for hackers to create powerful malware tools that could use to spread widespread damages. And the attack also raised questions about, interestingly enough, the legal and ethical implications of creating and using malware. Is the hackers who created this were eventually arrested and charged with the crimes. All right. But they came up with this interesting argument, saying that they're not the ones to blame for the attack. They say the companies that created the devices that were infected with this malware are also to blame, because they did not make their products more secure. Using this knowledge, using this attack or this type of defense, then we could use it against Microsoft for a variety of different things. So anytime something happens, we could just say, oh, Microsoft didn't make their products safe enough. I lost my ETH in this scam, so we should get it reimbursed. But man, these guys, they're just grasping at straws here. They screwed up. They did something wrong, and they're blaming the people that are actually creating and marketing these tools, the Internet of Things tools. No way, man. These guys are the ones that should be held accountable, not the people that are making these products and that they say that's not secure enough. It's not their problem. If you find a hole in it, you could address it, tell them, don't make a malware to take advantage of it. That's obviously a crime, and they should be held accountable for this.
Isn't it fair to say that these guys, like in their defense, okay, if we look through the number of platforms they took down, New York Times, Twitter, Guardian, Wall Street Journal, CNN, BBC, Fox, Spotify, Amazon, Reddit, PayPal, Airbnb, Slack, SoundCloud, HBO, and Netflix, they're just trying to make the world a better place, Len. You know? Like if we got rid of all these things, like maybe my pizza wouldn't show up as quickly. Maybe I wouldn't be able to get like, you know, a Dove men's body wash off Amazon in the bulk size that Shoppers Drug Mart doesn't carry. But goddamn, you know, I'd be happier after like 2 weeks without looking at any of this shit, wouldn't you? Like you'd just be a much happier person. We could solve a lot of the world's problems like that. Maybe that's the defense they should have used. These guys also went to work for the FBI for a bit, which is fun. That's kind of a cool story. I didn't know about these guys. This has affected me over the years for sure, as I'm sure it has you and you as well, listener viewer. But I had no idea about this story. I do want to read a little bit more into this. Maybe we should another potential guest for Access of Easy once we actually start trying to get people on. Larry Curley and Mo coming on, join us.
That'd be cool. Let's get them on. We could do a five person team.
That'd be great. And,
yeah, man. I want to play defense on that team. I don't
sure. That's it, folks. Another good show tonight. Glad you enjoyed it. I'm not asking if you enjoyed it. I know you did. Again, every week, me and Len record this podcast. It goes with the Access of Easy newsletter. I'm looking on my phone here at all the stories we didn't cover. There's at least 4 or 5 more that will probably be of interest to you if those ones were. So accessofeasy.com, subscribe to the newsletter, subscribe to the YouTube channel, Access of Easy on YouTube, and just search for Access of Easy in your podcast app and join us there as well. Until next time, friends, take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care.